Welcome to Farming Aotearoa with Peter Burke.
Hi folks, and welcome to the final edition of Farming Aotearoa for 2024. And once again, we have agricultural journalist Peter Burke. He's with me now in the studio to bring us up to date on what's been happening in the past month. So, Peter.
It's been a pretty busy month, actually, and a lot happening. And even right as we go right to the end of the year, we're starting to see every government agency is putting out press releases. They all have to get everything done before Christmas. So us poor journalists are having to cover this mountain of material that's coming out. And it's interesting stuff. I'm not getting complaining. It's just good. But it all comes out in about the last week before we go on holiday. And then they'd all go away and burrow into their hibernate over Christmas and emerge with new policies on the new year.
Okay.
So I thought, interesting, let's start with a bit of reflection, because it is a time to reflect. A year. And I think, to be fair, it's been a very tough year for farmers. So that's my initial observation. The sheep and beef guys have had a really tough go. The lamb guys in particular have had a hard time. But I think as we come to the end of the year, we're starting to see things have come a bit better. And I'm looking today at a survey from Rabobank saying that farmer confidence is up on what it was. It's the best it's been since 2017, which says quite a lot. And even those in the sheep industry are getting some good vibes. So I think we've had a really tough year. It's been a bounce back in terms of horticulture. We've seen record production of kiwifruit exported this year, good turnout for apples. Avocados have even turned the corner, which, and that's been a difficult one. They've had a couple of very difficult years. So we are seeing some positive signs. And I think there's also a whole lot of other funny things going on behind the scenes. Farmers sort of take it, there has been a change of government. The change of government is one that farmers, I guess, relate to, for want of a better word. And therefore, there has been some changes around, particularly around legislation, regulations, which are being softened, if you like, for the benefit of farmers, if you want to put it that way. We're seeing one in particular coming up, which will be the intention of government to allow the export of animals, live animals by sea in the new year. Not everyone agrees with that, but it's likely to go ahead because that's what government policy is, and there's some farmers in favour of it, a lot against it, I might add. And there's going to be some select committee hearings on that. I suspect there'll be some very strong views expressed in that. But one senses that that's going to go ahead. The government has pretty much made up its mind on that. We've had an interesting year around trade deals. We've had a couple of good ones. We've seen the New Zealand-EU trade agreement come into force, as it were, which means that there's some tariffs reduced on a lot of our products there. That's good news. And there's been trade deals in the Gulf states as well, which has been a positive side. The one interesting one is China, of course, and that's the enigma when it comes to agriculture, because it is the biggest market for New Zealand. While it is, there was again a little bit of, there's more optimism than there was, say, 6 months ago. One CEO told me when he came back from China quite recently, that he thought he was more optimistic than he's been in the past. So I guess we started off in a pretty negative way, and that's a whole lot. Dairy has been the same, but now dairy is getting, the predictions for a payout have been good, around about $10 per kilogram of milk solids. That's good. Horticulture, good. And I think what we're going to see in the next 12 months is something typical of a new government coming into power. The first year, they sort of muck around and work out what's going to happen in their world, and then the second year they really do it. It's a big doing year, so we're going to start to see a lot more doing things happen. And then the third year will be a policy. The emphasis will be on getting themselves re-elected, basically. That's what it will be. So that's just my sort of views. But I think, a positive year coming up, some good news coming up, but there's a few headwinds. So,
right. Well, you were talking about crops before, and I may have told you a bit of a show-off story that my own crops have been pretty amazing this year. I'm digging up some potatoes and they're absolutely gorgeous. But you reminded me when you're talking about kiwifruit. Kiwifruit this year has been extraordinarily good. The taste of the fruit. Has something happened? Was it just had a better year?
I think it's been a better year. And also I think there's been a lot more emphasis on the quality of kiwifruit. It went through a couple of bad years where the quality dropped away. and they'd be the first to admit that too, but they've got that under control now. But the weather plays a big part in that too, and we've had a really good weather. Now, interestingly enough, it sort of drags me on to the next subject, which is really around the weather.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, you've got a lot of sheep and beef farmers around the east coast of both the North and South Islands, and we've seen the fires down the South Island, obviously, that's one sign of it. But in Te Rāwhiti and in Hawke's Bay, again, very dry, you know, high temperatures, wind, those areas are drying up very quickly. And that's not good for the sheep and beefies, but for the guys in horticulture, it's great.
Right.
Now, the message I'm getting from, I was talking to one of the big companies up in Gisborne, Leader Brand, they're 2 weeks ahead with their corn production. They're going to have their corn cobs out. They hope to sell 2 million cobs, I think, by the end of the new year, before the end of the new year. They've had a very good season, and that's why horticulture has done well. Apples have picked up, obviously, by the same thing. So, you know, what's good for one is not good for the other, but interesting. The good news a little bit is that while it's dry on the east coast, it's quite wet on the west coast, so therefore we'll see farmers up on the east coast start to move stock away, but there is a place for them to go. They can go west because there was feed there. We had a situation a few years ago where we had a dry on both sides of the islands, and that was really hard. There was a real feed pinch. But now I think, you know, fingers crossed, that that might be over, and there may be an opportunity for those farmers who are having to get this. I think what we're hearing at the moment is that there will be production will be, there'll be a movement to get stock away quickly, although... having said that, there was news the other day that the lamb drop this year is right down.
Right.
Dropped by 1 million in the last 12 months.
Do we know why?
A mixture of things. The ewe flock has dropped, therefore, there was a weather issue around the South Island particularly. In Southland, the lambing percentage was low because the weather got to a lot of lambs, and the number of lambs born or survived in the South was lower than the North. But you've also got another issue, which is brings me on to something that's I've been quite busy on the last couple of weeks. There's been a big agricultural climate change conference on in Wellington. You may have seen it. And one of the issues there, of course, is one of the farmers, the sheep farmers' concerns are the amount of forestry being the amount of land going into forestry. And I think that's put the pinch to some degree on the sheep industry. I know that the owners of the Smithfield plant, and I think it's Timaru, were saying that there's a lack of stock going through. One of the reasons was the conversions to forestry, and the government has now announced that it's going to put rules in place which will limit or make it harder for people to convert to forestry for carbon credits. In other words, and the reason simply is if you have farming in a place, if you don't have the small communities, you lose all sorts of things. You lose schools, you lose all sorts of infrastructure. And so farming is actually it's a glue for communities, whereas forestry isn't quite that same glue, I don't believe.
When you talk forestry, are you talking about turning paddocks back into...
pine.
Oh, just so pine, so dirty old pine.
Yeah, I mean...
That they eventually cut down and...
So,
they're regenerating the land.
No, I mean, there was argument that says that you should plant... In some areas, there's farms where there probably shouldn't be farms, and there's areas where there should probably be forest, but should it be exotic or should it be native? And it's a good question about that. I mean, the reason we've got such big forestry was there was a big push in the 70s to take the native forest away and put pasture on it. It never worked because the soil was just, the thin layer just washed away.
And look what's happened recently.
Exactly. So you've got that problem. But that's a big issue. And there's been the head of Beef and Lamb New Zealand, who represents the sheep and beef farmers, Kate Ackland, was saying that they've been calling for this for some time. They reckon that between 2017 and today, they've lost over nearly 260,000 hectares of land to forestry. And that affects export earnings.
Mm.
And, you know, one farmer said, we've just got to stop the march of forestry on farmland. It's just not the right thing to do. Forest owners are not happy about that, but if to say that everyone else seems to be quite happy about it. So
it's a tricky one.
It's a very tricky one, but it also is something that we need to think about in terms of our economy. Where is it going? And the loss of 1 million lambs is quite significant. That's a big number for me. You know, we had, I don't know if I can't remember the exact number of lambs we had, but I remember back in the 70s when I was, you know, doing that sort of work, we had something like 72 million sheep. Well, we haven't got that now. To be fair, we've also got a reasonable number of numbers have increased because the genetics have been better, but it's still, you know, it's not a perfect situation. So that's something just to sort of pick up and put in the box of, you know, what's happening. So, you know, it's an ongoing issue. And I think for farmers, for communities, sheep farming is big. We are hearing today and in the last few days that the price, that because New Zealand's lamb kill will be down, I think it's quite down. I forget the number, I have to look at it now. Something massive. The lamb numbers are down by 6.5%. That means there'll be a problem with meat processing plants, not enough stock to go through. And I would predict, without any evidence whatsoever, that that if this keeps up, we'll see a drop. We'll see further closures of meat processing plants, because you can't, if you're not getting the numbers through them, those works that aren't really, that could potentially fall over, will fall over, and they'll keep good ones going.
Well, there's, you know, another use for the sheep. What about their wool?
Wool is worth
nothing.
Nothing. I mean,
we need that to change. We need to.
Well, you know, Kangaroo the other day saying that they're going to put, synthetic carpets in all their places. Well, come on.
That's ridiculous.
I have to say they need to change their drugs.
Well, you know, we're talking about, one minute we're talking about climate change, and the next minute we're still talking about making plastics and synthetics, etc. We really need to have a serious.
I won't be surprised if we see something from government on this in the next few weeks.
Interesting.
My guess is that there will be some announcements on that, and that it will be saying to government departments, "You will do this."
Yeah.
And I don't see why not. I think if a government can't set an example, well, who can? But I thought the Kainga or whoever they are to do that was pretty stupid, quite frankly. And you know, that is not what we're about. One figure I was told was that for an North Island hill country sheep farmer, wool represents 3% of their income.
Gee.
So says is that what we're doing now is shearing sheep for animal welfare issues.
Yeah.
Now there are exceptions to that. Don't get me wrong.
Of course.
And there will always be exceptions, but that is an average. I think it's an interesting number that someone's telling me that, you know, 3% will. And that's why there was this move to change the subject completely, but there was a move towards self-shedding sheep. Now, there's a tongue twister for you.
Wow. A tongue twister, and also what a bizarre concept. But there's some goats that lose their wool, aren't there?
Yeah, there's actually a sheep breed called the Wiltshires. And the Wiltshires are self-shedding sheep.
Okay.
I've actually owned some myself. I had a few for a while.
Yeah.
And now the Massey University is doing a big trial up in the Wairarapa on that to get some real hard data and to build up a flock of sheep and to build up some rams that will produce, to enable farmers to convert from their Romney flocks to the self-shedding thing, because there isn't the money in wool now. And the comment was made to me that if you're a sheep farmer and you've got a wool shed that's sort of looking a bit dilapidated, where are you going to spend money to build it?
For 3% of your...
Are you going to rebuild it? Or you're not going to. And what are you going to do? Are you going to go to... will you look at the self-shedding ones? Will you look at other options? Will you look at cattle, beef? So those are the factors in it. But the Wiltshire is certainly gaining a lot of interest. And I went to a field day over there about a month ago. Oh, 150 people there for that, to look at those things. And the data that Massey is doing is pretty great. So
I'd imagine, yeah.
So that's a six-year project, and they're two-thirds of the way through it now. But that was just a sidebar on this whole thing. But interesting one, eh?
It is an interesting one, because there's just this whole mindset change. You know, we're trying to look at economy, trying to get things for cheap, but then those cheap things, and you know, impact the environment, but then people can't afford this, etc. It's kind of like we need to go back to old-fashioned, proper... natural
Well, someone once said to me, and I think it was, I learned this at a management college years ago, but the comment was, price is not a benefit, it's what you pay for a benefit. Yeah. And sometimes price, you can buy something cheaply, but you might buy three of those things in 2 years.
Yeah.
If you spend a bit more money at the start, you'll have it for 5 years. And that's what I think of it. And I also think that New Zealand's got to start to, if they're true about this idea of sustainability, you've got to live it. You can't just, you know, bring up the paintbrush and put a bit of green around the place and hope that it's going to make you look green.
Yeah.
And I think that's where certain government departments have to rightly, bluntly get their act together and stop being stupid, because there's a, I don't know, the rate of stupidity in some departments is overwhelming at times. Anyway.
Right. I might distract you with another question then. Talk to me about trade barriers and non-tariff
issues. Okay, that's interesting, isn't it? Trade barriers. And I'm going to go back to other things, but the trade barriers, there's a booklet out just a couple of weeks back by the Horticultural Export Authority, and they look after, their role is to keep an eye on what's happening around trade barriers around the world, to see that markets are opened up and so forth. Now, while we get free trade agreements, which we have, we've got one with the EU, we've got one with the UK, we've got a couple, and we've got one with China and others. But tucked in behind those sometimes is these other, they call them non-tariff measures. We used to call them non-tariff trade barriers, but and they're the same thing. What that means is that, yes, you can have access to our country, it's lovely. Oh, but by the way, your labelling is not good enough, so therefore you must change your labelling. Or we can't clear your product for 5 days coming into the country. Or we really need to put some more tests on your thing. It's great, you can get in, but we need to do more testing. And these sort of little niggly things, they're not new. They've been around for eons, actually. I can remember them back in my days, back years ago, that these were sort of things that you had. But they're becoming a bit of a source of niggle at the moment, because and this is just relating particularly to horticulture. I mean, at the moment, I think the sector is facing a bill of about $135 million a year on tariffs. So you can imagine that is. The biggest culprit of that is actually India. Their tariffs are the highest that we face now.
Really?
Yeah. So if you're exporting to India, the tariffs on apples is 50%. So tariffs in India are costing New Zealand $78 million. So people sort of, don't look at these stats sometimes, but they're interesting ones, aren't they? So that the European FTA enabled New Zealand to get into Europe well, and that was a good deal. And that freed up a lot of tariffs off pork products particularly. But these little niggly ones are always there. And another example of bad behaviour is Australia, actually, noted for holding us up at the product up at the border unnecessarily in the view of many New Zealanders. Other things that they can do, like... they might say, okay, well, only you apply for one company to apply for one admission of one product in a year. So it might take a year to process that application. That's far too long, quite frankly. So the niggle with, I talked to Simon Hegart, who's the CEO of HEA, and this is the issue that they're going to be looking at closely. I suspect in the coming year that while Todd McClay will be going around trying to open up new trade barriers, behind the scenes, he'll also be starting to talk a little bit more about these non-tariff trade measures, which are a source of niggle.
Like they're lining someone's pockets unnecessarily.
Well, they're just being... It's almost like they don't want to... they're almost forced to have a trade barrier. They have a free trade agreement, but then they want to stuff it up by being naughty. I mean, Canada's another example of that at the moment. Canada's is one of those residual breakers of law. There's a deal with Canada at the moment, and they're just refusing to implement it, point blankly. You think Canada would be a little bit more, but Canada is proving to be a real problem for our dairy industry particularly. So you've got all these little things happening at the fringes. And
little niggles going
there's
on.
There's a bit of niggle going on in the world at the moment, and I think it's, who knows what's going to happen now with Trump coming in. That may also change things a bit, because Trump is not Are we going to see America go back to its policy of splendid isolation, which is what it was always just tried to be? America has not been, they're a good market for New Zealand, don't get me wrong, and they do, and we do a lot of product there, it's great. But they're not, they've never been globalists, if you like. Mm. And I think that that comes back, and just a personal thing, that a hell of a lot of Americans don't own passports.
Yeah, and a lot of them don't travel.
No, they don't. They travel. So but,
or even within their own country.
Exactly. So they're not really, they're quite insular people in that sense. Whereas Kiwis, you know, have been around the world three times before the Americans have gone to the next town.
Yeah, yeah.
And the same with Aussies. We're much more international. And I think other countries are like the likes of Ireland and that sort of thing. So, yeah. So that's that side. And I just want to go back a little bit. I'll talk about the new CEO of Hort as well. A new CEO there, very good. Kate Scott, come from her own business down in the south, taking over the role. And she's, again, come up and said that one of the things that she wants to do is to get some consistency into regulations. And I think that's a very good objective, because you go around the country and you can have an orchard or a farm in one region and part of another, and you might find that your farm is split by regulations. One council will have one set of regulations for a piece of land metres away.
Yeah.
It's a different one. So what the hell are these guys doing,
yeah,
for heaven's sake? So she's asking for consistency, and I think that's a very good idea. And so we'll hopefully see Kate Scott take a role in that. She's only new in the job, but she's got a lot of experience in that sector,
okay,
in the planning area. She was a speaker at a conference I went to in Sydney a year or so ago, and a very good speaker as well. So, you know, it's going to be interesting how she goes in that role. She's also talking about climate change and how we adapt to it. And I think this is something that's going to be a big thing for New Zealand, adaptation to it. Like, for example, I was talking to a guy some months ago. He'd been on an international conference on kiwi fruit. Met up with a guy from Peru, and they were saying that they're having to move some of their plantings of kiwi fruit to different parts of the country because of climate.
Gee, that's a big step. Having to actually pick up and move.
No. And that will happen in New Zealand.
Jeez.
And I think what you'll also find is that in the science area, that there'll be science will be looking at how can you breed varieties of, say, kiwi fruit or other fruit, vegetables, that are better adapting to the climate they're grown in currently.
Yeah.
Because you may have to do that. You know, as we warm up, what's going to happen?
And well, in my mind, we'll take all the mangoes and the bananas and the pineapples off the Australians, start growing out of here because the weather's changing so much.
Yeah, what they're going to do, I don't know what they're going to grow, crocodiles. But you know, it is something that we're going to have to look at. And
it's pretty scary.
It is scary, but I think what we also will see in horticulture is a lot more emphasis on irrigation. That will be a big part of it. I know that Lederbrand, for example, in Gisborne, they've got a big greenhouse, I think is the best way of saying it, or
hothouse. Yeah.
And they've got their irrigation in there as well. You've got to have that.
Yeah.
I mean, those that haven't got irrigation now with this drought living are going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, they could potentially be in trouble.
Yeah.
Although the rivers are still high, but, and there's always a but in this thing can change in weeks.
You
know, it can go from the sort of problem to disaster in a matter of weeks. And there has been talk that there will be a drought declaration on the east coast of the North Island at some stage.
Gee.
I wouldn't be surprised to see that by January, probably. I guess that's just my own thing.
Okay, now I'm going to turn this around and hopefully get some nice stories in, because I think we need them. We need to be cheered up a little bit.
Yeah.
So have you got something for me about some farm animals?
Farm animals. Lovely story. I spent time over in the Wairarapa, and there's a scientist over there, Renee, Associate Professor Ray Thomas, and she's doing a wonderful trial on shade for sheep. Because what we're seeing, obviously, nowadays is the paddocks are much more open. And it was great. What they're doing there is just, they've built some structures in the paddock. They're just like a low-level shade thing with a bit of tin on the roof and some pretty... But they're measuring, they've got cameras, they've got collars on the sheep. They can tell you, you know, how long Betsy Jane... stayed under the shade, and then they've got a video camera to prove it was Betsy Jane as well.
Yeah.
And they're doing all this wonderful technology just to see what difference it makes for them. And I think this is very true, because I know I've got a live sentence block of my own. And one of the first things I did when I got it was pretty bare land. I planted trees. And I just go out now and watch they'll stalk the sheep, and if it's cold, they'll go into the trees. If it's hot, they'll go into the trees. They don't put their legs in the air and sunbathe, for God's sake, you know. Come on, they don't do that anymore. Only our stupid humans do that. But animals are very, very intelligent, and if they've got those options, they will take them.
Yes.
So this is providing a potential answer. They're not saying that you should build these types of sheds on every farm. There may be other ways. There may be trees. There may be this. But interesting comment she made to me was, she remember said, I was watching some sheep, and one of them was almost snuggling up to a fence post because there was a bit of shade from the fence post. The sheep just wanted to get its face out of the sun. Another one was moving around with a road sign to see the shade being put on the farm by the sign.
Oh,
so I think
really
that we underestimate some of these, but I'm really impressed with the work that she has done. It's a great, and what they're doing also is they put up some shade cloth as well, and that the purpose of that is just to see whether the sheep will get away from the wind. So there's a lot of that thing. So that's a trial. It's been conducted at Massey's Research Farm at Riverside in the Wairarapa. And I just love going out to these research places because you meet these wonderful scientists who are so passionate. They're so dedicated to what they're doing. And they're doing great things. And they're getting data to, you know, everyone knows shades are an important thing. But they've got the data to show this is what it does.
They can back it up.
And back it up. And say, okay, you lose production because if your sheep get stressed or your cows get stressed, then production goes down. So should we talk about cows too?
Come on.
I love cows. I think they're beautiful.
Cows are great.
Yeah, I like cows. Anyway, so it's time of the year now to take the stress out of cows. And again, a comment from one of the Dairy NZ animal behaviour experts saying that, you know, it's time to think about what might they need. Now, we know now that dairy farms, because they've got bigger pivot irrigators, there's not so many trees in the paddocks. There's maybe some on the shelter belts on the side. But just to be aware that you've got to look at these animals and make sure that they do have shade, and do things like maybe milking earlier in the morning or later in the afternoon, so they don't go out, they're not walking the golden mile in the heat of the day. And the same applies for staff, of course, too.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, the stress can be for them as well. So they're giving the message out now, make sure the stock of what good water supply. If you can put shade there, do it for trees. And then they're saying that you can actually grow potentially some tree species which can be actually under the pivot irrigators. So they may be possible to put in paddocks now. They're looking at the option as well, not just pine trees, which are the old thing. So, yeah, so that's a big issue. And it's summertime, so it's time for farmers and everyone, life sentence people, if they've got them like me, to look at the animals. You know, it's hot. Get the sheep shorn. Look after them and give them shade and comfort.
Well, nature is smart. You know, trees are also the lungs of the planet, so you're doing a couple of things by planting the trees.
I've met more dumb people than animals, actually. Anyway.
All right, give me another story. Give me one about
another one here.
Underground.
This is the undercover secrets of the soil.
Undercover secrets of the soil.
I think it's a lovely story. I met up with a scientist up in Massey a couple of weeks ago, and she was a wonderful woman doing some research into regenerative agriculture. Gee, I'm running out of... But what she did was to show me, put a spade in the ground and dig up worms, and explain to me, in that one spade, there was 100 worms. She said in a square metre there should be, I think it's 1,000 worms.
Wow.
It's massive.
Should be.
Should be, yeah. Okay. So this is Maria, Associate Professor Maria Miner, and she told me about, I never knew about worms. I thought worms were the garden, I like them. But some of them are sort of surface dwellers. They're like vacuum cleaners. They clean up the dung and the little bits of grass around the top of the species of grass. There's others that go down deep. They dig these massive great canals down, which lets the water down, which lets the fertilizer get down into them, and then also they go right down, and then they bring up them some of the mineral rich subsoil, some other nutrients up to the root zone of the plant. So they fulfill all these great roles. All the time we're walking around on the farm, these creatures of God are doing a great job for us.
They're doing all the work.
But it's Christmas time, yes. And Father Christmas has said that the bigger worms have got to lie low. So what's happening now is the bigger worms that go deep have decided it's time to stop. So they've covered themselves in slime, made a little place for themselves in the soil, and they've gone and hibernating. So for the next two or three months until the spring, the autumn rains come, these worms are just going to be in there waiting for the rain to come. Once the rain comes down, they'll get up and work again. Isn't that wonderful?
It is wonderful, and you do wonder where they all come from when it starts raining. All of a sudden, worms appear.
They do. But you go to a golf course, you suddenly see worms come up.
Oh, do you?
Yes, absolutely. I've watched it, and it'll be a wet day, and sometimes the worms will come to the surface.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, I think that was a nice one to end. So Santa's little workers are busy at the moment hibernating, but they will come back. They'll come back in the new year. Don't worry about it.
And all of this is all there for a reason. You may not understand it, but nature has
and if you see worms in soil, you know that the soil is in good condition. The other thing is to aerate it.
Yes.
That's a big thing. But anyway, that's my last. And, by the way, Happy Christmas, everyone.
Yes.
Have fun doing this job. And it's nice to talk to someone who knows something about agriculture too. And I enjoy it. Thank you very much for your support.
No, we love having you in, and we look forward to all the stories that you're going to bring us next year. Hopefully some good news.
But there will be lots of good news.
Thank you for all the updates. Have a great Christmas.
Thank you.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.